golf, and you're going to like it.
On the Tampa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network, live from the 19th Hole Studios inside Ferg's Sports Bar and Grill.
How about a Frisco?
Bringing you the week's coverage of all things golf. From the PGA and LPGA to the WNCA and LIV.
We're waiting.
And now,
Your Honor,
let's tee off with two pros and a hack. PGA professionals John Rager and Bill Buttner, and your host, Mike Rickard, along with the entertainment squad, a colorful cast of characters.
You want to make $14 the hard way?
Now, everyone back up. Here's Mike Rickard.
Good afternoon and welcome to On the Tee, Florida. Two pros in the hack. We're live from our Ferg's 19th Hole Clubhouse Studios down here in 13th and Central. As we wait for the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Florida Panthers to do battle, this place will be a jam-packed, wild arena, I can assure you that. And my right-hand man, John Rager, is up there in Sagon, Augustine Beach, one of the pros. Of course, he's got a very detailed history in the world of golf. PGA of America teaching professional, golf course owner, marketer, you name it, he's done it. President of the North Florida chapter, and of course to my left is Bill Buttner. 15 years on the PGA Tour, teaching Pro of America down at St. Pete Country Club, and semi-retired with Eckerd College. And, of course, now here we are in the middle of the show, and he's kissing babies and hugging pretty girls. And that's Bill Buttner.
That's what we do. That's what we do here.
That's what we do. That's why we're out front, my man. And then, of course, last week, we introduced this young man. He's our new handicapper, Christian Champ Sharp, and his weekly picks, Fairway Fortunes. Looking forward to that conversation a little bit later on. We've got a great show. We're going to be talking a little college golf here shortly. Cameron Jordan from Golf Week. He's a college writer, good friend of Adam Woodard and Lance Ringler of mine. So we've got the trio, the trifecta out of Golf Week at our access. And then a little bit later on, we'll talk to Michael Furr. And the debate will be, is Texas quickly taking over from the state of Florida as the basically the hub? You take a look at the move of PGA of America move there. You've got so many events right now. To be quite candid, if it wasn't for the history, it would be a no contest right now. Number of events and the history that's coming out of there, and the world's number one that's coming out of there. So let's bring John Rager into the conversation down here at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, brought to you by our good friends at Ice Pick Vodka, Sea Dogs Brewery, and Shipyard Beer, and of course our really good friend, and that is Chris Lewis from Michelob Ultra that sponsored our leagues, and we'll get some summer leagues going here shortly. And I'm really going to put a lot of effort and energy into get a women's league. Everybody's talking about the women's sports. We're going to have a women's league down here, John Rager, and that's going to. I'll do the recruiting, and you just do the setup.
Hey, looking forward to a great show this week. Obviously, there's so much to talk about, particularly the TPC Louisiana hosting the Zurich Classic, and this is the two-man team event, which is a lot of fun. You get a lot of friends that partner up, a couple of premier pairings out there, and when we get to our champ, our Fairway Forces segment, a little bit later on in the broadcast, we can talk a little bit about some of those pairings and some of the unusual things that these pairings consist of, particularly Eric Cole was the Rookie of the Year last year, and he's teamed up with 65-year-old Russ Cochran, and the reason for that pairing was the fact that Eric's caddy is Russ's son, and it took Eric like 30 times to finally convince Russ to come on out there and play in this PGA Tour event. So a lot of great stories there, plus the European Tour is in Japan, and for the Honda Classics, so we're looking forward to talk a little bit about that. Plus we'll have later on the broadcast the John Rager Report. And if you go to Facebook, LinkedIn, X, and Instagram, you'll see the I posted something today talking about the $930 million equity that is going to be distributed to the PGA Tour pros once they receive their investment from the strategic group that put $3 billion into the tour. So a lot of details on that. We can have a lively discussion about that later on in the broadcast.
Hey, before we go any further, let's make certain that our colleague and, of course, our entertainment director, the St. Petersburg's most talented man, and that, of course, an interesting man, is Tom Gribben. Tom Gribben probably sitting there a little smiley and sedated in a hospital bed waiting to get out tomorrow, have a little knee surgery. You know the drill, Bill Button. You just did it several months ago. What's it like laying there? You got all the pretty girls coming in and you're all morphined up?
Yeah, I was going to say, morphined up, not feeling a thing and feeling pretty good.
Yeah, and knowing you, asking for hugs and kisses, that'd be Billy Butner.
I'm fending him off. Fending him off.
And then the head of nursing on the floor would come in, Mr. Butner, please keep your hands to yourself. Could you please restrain yourself?
Wait a minute. That sounds familiar. Wait a minute. I couldn't remember where I heard that last.
Tom Gribben, he's probably listening to the broadcast right now, and probably the nurses are running in there. Go, what's that noise? Who's making that noise in the background there?
Billy Butner, we're opening the show. Who was number 12? Tom Brady just came up here and hugged you and kissed you.
Again, as you
know. That was a female, by the way.
As you know my history, I don't know who she was.
You're horrible, man.
What am I going to tell you?
When you're at the Eckerd College basketball games and all those people come up and they shake your hand and you're patting them on the back.
You're smiling like
your pony ass just goes, great to see you again, pal. That's what I do. How you doing, partner?
Champ.
Yeah, champ. I'm a champ guy. But anyway,
I'll get back to you on that one. I'll figure out who that is.
Well, whoever it was, good call. Probably an Eckerd College graduate.
Probably.
Now he's waving at other people. Why don't you just run for St. Pete City Council?
I was going for the mayor, but if you want to start City Council, that's fine.
Welch has already got that job, and he's got a lot on his plate right now with the Rays issue.
Okay.
Speaking of the Rays, a nice win last night, finally. And now they head north, and we've got the Lightning to watch. They're going. They should have a good opportunity. They're going to the White Sox in Chicago, who have three big wins on the season. So we're going to be talking a little collegiate golf. I know you love it because you've been coaching the girls' game. I know John Rager has coached girls' high school teams in the past and possibly a girls. But I'm just getting
and men's college also. Men's college teams also there, Mike.
That's what I thought. Yep. You know, and I was watching the regionals, saw my Iowa State Cyclones got in there, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to get a hold of Adam or Lance Ringler and see if we can get some college conversation going, because there's a lot of hype on women's sports right now, and I was intrigued.
And I went up to Pelican there to watch the SEC tournament.
How was that? We never really got it.
I mean, phenomenal. I mean, obviously the golf course is Augusta-ish, not a blade of grass out of place, and the girls are so talented. Not from this country, but they're so talented.
Well, the head coach of South Carolina was interviewed yesterday, and she said the beauty of that SEC championship being so brutal, it gets them ready for the regionals and the NCAAs because of the competition.
Yeah, and fortunately for those girls at the Division I, they travel at different regions. They don't all go to the same region like Division II does.
All over the country.
Right. They change.
So that's March Madness, basically.
Basically, I mean, you distribute the talent throughout the whole country, and you make them earn their way in.
Start of the second hour, we will dive into the leaderboards this weekend, of course, and then take a look back at the incredible performances by one Nelly Korda and Scottie Scheffler. Everybody's talking about it all week. That's the number one, should be the number one story in the golf world, obviously. Again, though, it's about money, John, and you'll talk about that in the John Rager report.
Hey, you know, while we're touching a little bit on college golf, I want to give some kudos to my alma mater, the College of Charleston. The men's golf team set a new Colonial Athletic Association record at 35 under par to secure their seventh CAA title yesterday at the Data Island Club in St. Helena Island, South Carolina. So they were four strokes behind Elon when they went in there, and all five of their players shot under par the final round. And so a spectacular finish, and they're going to be off to the NCAA regionals, and they'll find out on Wednesday, May 1st, is when the Golf Channel 2 o'clock is going to tell all the college teams which regionals they're going to as they continue to qualify for the NCAA championships.
Well, a gentleman that has his finger on that pulse, and this is for his Oklahoma City Thundering Herd. a resounding win last night to go to 2-0. He's an Oklahoma State Cowboy graduate. He's a writer for Golf Week magazine. This is his first, and don't run him off, Bill. This is his first time on our show. We're very fortunate to have the Lance Ringlers and Adam Woodard, and he knows them both very well. And he, of course, is Cameron Jordan. Is it Jordan? Jordan. Help the old man with the pronunciation there, Cameron. We got you, Cameron?
Yes, I'm here. It's just like journal or journey. It's Jordan instead.
Gotcha. So you probably had a long morning staying up late and watching your Oklahoma City Thunder as well as the rest of the metropolitan area there. Hell of a win, and you go to 2-0, and now it's time for you to focus back in the world of college golf.
Yeah, it's fun to get a little escape every single night, especially now with playoff basketball on. It's always fun to watch the local team and see them do well, and obviously winning the first seed in the West this year is pretty impressive. So it's been fun to watch them, and fun and exciting, and been cool to see how the city's rallied around the team, and really excited to kind of see what they continue to do throughout the playoffs.
Hey, let's since it happened so quickly yesterday, we didn't get a real chance, and you had a call coming in. Why don't you give our audience a little bio on you, how you got to Golf Week magazine, your passion for the sport, and where you are today? Would you please?
I wasn't born in Oklahoma, but have been kind of raised in the Oklahoma City area almost my entire life, and ended up going to Oklahoma State and getting my degree, and actually covered high school sports for a newspaper here in Oklahoma City for about 3.5 years until I started covering golf 2 summers ago. And what a time to get into the game of golf, right? Been focusing a lot on the amateur and college game, but also helping out with everything PGA Tour, LPGA, LIV Golf, and everything else that's involved with the game right now. So it's been really fun to kind of dive right into everything that's going on, and still learning every single day. It's a blast to be able to do this, and still learning about the game, learning about the players and coaches on the college side, and getting to know them through the amateur game during the summer. And it's definitely a privilege to be able to do it.
I'm sure that people like, of course, Adam Woodard, the youngster, and his plethora of knowledge, and then Lance Ringler's been in the collegiate world for almost four decades now. He and I have had a relationship since about 2003, and I'm sure those guys have helped you along the way because they're just two great guys.
Absolutely. Lance, there's no one who knows college golf better than Lance Ringler, and being able to pluck his brain and talk with him about anything that you possibly could know. He has a wealth of knowledge, and I just know so much about the sport. And then Adam is another one who, when I started at Golf Week, he really helped me right off the bat. Is never afraid to help me out if I have a difficult question, never afraid to give his advice, and he's doing a lot of covering LIV Golf and PGA Tour now, so he's kind of moved on from the college ranks, but he left a great some really big shoes to fill with everything he did and all the good work he did. So it's been fun to learn from him, and been really fun to work with both of them every single day too.
And Lance Ringler is out at the Mountain West Championships right now when I talked to him yesterday. So he gets around the country. I know that for certain. And I'm almost certain he was at the SEC. We should have had you, Bill Butner, head over there and meet him because he's a heck of a good guy. So we'll throw our pros into this conversation. Bill Butner, PGA of America teaching professional, and was on the tour 15 years. He's been coaching the college game for 22 years? 21 and a half. You still got your...
That's true. My finger's on the pulse.
Yeah, and John Rager's another one of our PGA of America teaching professionals, Cameron. He's up on St. Augustine Beach, and he has a deep resume of high school and women's and coaching and teaching and working with them. And so we'll throw the questions with John Rager.
Well, Cameron, hey, welcome to On the Tee Florida Golf, and... you know, I was looking through the Golf Week USA Today website here and saw quite a few articles that you had posted just recently, and one of them obviously was the fact that the 2024 women's NCAA regionals have all been set, and I see an extensive list of regional qualifiers. And one of the things that jumped out at me was that the national championship, the NCAA finals, will be at the Omni La Costa Resort and Spa in Carlsbad, California. They used to have the PGA Tour of Champions, Tournament of Champions there every year. But I understand that this is the first of the 3 years that both the men's and the women's championships will be at the same place. Can you elaborate on that a little bit for us?
Yeah, it's they've been at the same place for nearly a decade now, but this is the first of a 3 year contract that they're going to be at Omni La Costa. The last 3 years they've been at Greyhawk Golf Club in Scottsdale, Arizona, and Greyhawk actually was interested in possibly hosting this year. There were some questions about 6 to 10 months ago regarding whether Omni La Costa would even be ready. A completely new course renovation. I believe Gil Hance is the one who's been tasked with renovating that north course. The very first golf that's going to be played on it is the NCAA Championship, starting with the women from May 17th to the 22nd. So it's going to be really interesting to see how such a new golf course that's probably going to be a little bit firm, especially on the greens. It's going to be interesting to see how receptive it is. But, yeah, it's going to be a fun 2 weeks at the end of May for NCAAs out in California.
And you'll be out there all 2 weeks, won't you?
I will be there all 2 weeks. I get there on the practice day of the women and kind of get boots on the ground and get familiar with the space. And it's going to be a really fun 2 weeks. Busy 2 weeks, but a fun 2 weeks.
Hey, fellas.
Hey, Cameron, I have another question for you here. As we look down, you know, obviously one of the teams of interest to us is the University of Florida, you know, women's golf team. And I was looking at the regionals, and I guess most of our listeners may think that the regionals are all set where you just regionally have all the teams play together, but it looks like they're mixed up throughout the whole country. I noticed that University of Florida is going to the East Lansing Regional up at Forest Acres Golf Club in Michigan State. It's going to host it. How do they disperse all these teams around the country like that? Is there any rhyme or reason to it to be able to say, okay, well, Florida team goes here, and then the Florida State team is going to go across the country to a different regional? How's that all put together?
You know, it kind of goes based off of rankings. They go, from my understanding and knowledge of it, it's not necessarily like a snake draft, so to say, through the rankings, but when you get your number one seeds, obviously the top overall seed is going to get the closest regional, and you kind of go down the bracket. So as you can tell, USC is actually the number six team, and so this is not necessarily the sixth regional, but this is just where USC was slotted in. They finished runner-up at the Pac-12s earlier this week, and that's where they slotted was to host the Michigan State regional. Northwestern and Florida were just kind of the next two teams that fell in line to go there, and as you can tell, there's a couple of California teams, obviously Florida being from Gainesville. Northwestern is one of the closest teams, obviously, to host Michigan State. But you've got teams from all over the country in this region, all different corners of the country that are going there. So it is a little bit of randomness, but it's just kind of depending on, they kind of go back and forth and weave how they send teams to which regionals. Obviously, the teams that host will always play at their home regional if they make the NCAA tournament.
It's not too far off from NCAA basketball. They take the seeds and they try and distribute equal regions. So that's kind of their thinking, I believe. They're trying to get equal regions so that nobody's shut out in one particular region.
So they want to freeze out the Lady Gators heading up to Michigan, huh?
No, they want to make it an equal opportunity.
I saw
it myself. Hey, you know, for our listeners out there, one of the things that Cameron Jordan with Golf Week USA Today has a lot of great articles out there, just like our friend Adam Woodward out there that, you know, we can do a whole golf show on all the articles that you guys post out there because it's really wonderful. And something really jumped out at me today. I was reading the article that you wrote about Frankie Kaplan III has shot a 58 on the Korn Ferry Tour and he broke Scotty Scheffler's course record. I mean, 58, holy smokes. That's big news.
It's a 58, and he parred a par 5 to close his day. He had 7 straight birdies on the back 9. It very easily could have been a 57, which, if you remember, a couple months ago, Cristobal Del Solar shot 57 down in Colombia on the Korn Ferry Tour. It's been a very interesting year on the Korn Ferry Tour with how many low scores there's been. There's been a 57, a 58, and even a 59 from Aldrich Pottgeiter, who's 19 years old when he shot 59. So
equipment.
It's the layout that they're playing is Texas Rangers Golf Club. It's just a little over 7,000 yards where they're playing it this week. But a 58 is a 58. I mean, he shot 29 on both sides. I believe only the second person in a PGA Tour sanctioned event to do that, and I'm blanking on the guy at first. It happened back in, I believe, 2014 or 15. But yeah, Frankie with an excellent round, 1358. I mean, that just seems like video game numbers.
I saw on X today, they had a video of him walking off the golf course, and somebody was talking to him, and he really didn't even know what he shot. He was so much in the zone of playing golf, he had no idea that he actually shot 58. He had to be told that's what he shot.
It would be nice to be able to have that mindset.
You know, John Rager and Bill, you know, you guys talked about equipment, and we've been discussing, Cameron, you know, on the PGA side of things, you know, television ratings down. And as I look at the world golf rankings, if you're a periphery fan, there's a lot of young kids that you never had any idea who they are, and they're not moving the needle yet. And when you see this influx of Korn Ferry talent and the incredible depth of it, you see the Nick Dunlaps in the collegiate game going right into the pros. I think there's going to be a window here. The ratings aren't great until these guys can have some personalities. I mean, when Scottie Scheffler ranked number one, definitely the number one golfer, you know, in the world. But he's not a personality. When he can't move the needle, I think the PGA Tour in many aspects is in jeopardy of losing a generation of followers, and that might be the old guys, because we really don't know who they are unless you're just an over-the-top passionate golf person.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting topic, because this young group of stars, I would argue that the amateur game right now is in good a shape as it's ever been, and partially is because of the depth. I mean, there's, you look up and down the world amateur golf rankings, and while those rankings are not perfect by any means, you can go up and down and find players who have won big time amateur tournaments all across the world. Part of it is just how well these guys play when they turn professional, because obviously not everybody is going to be a star. Competition now at the PGA Tour is harder to win a lot. I mean, that is a credit to how good Scottie's been, even on the women's side, how good Nelly Cord has been the last couple of months. On both the men's and women's side, there's so many good stars in amateur golf. It's just how well can these tours market these young players as they get older and as they progress in their careers. And I think that's just something that, as people look forward, you got to find new ways to try to market stars. And that's something that players can take care of a lot of that themselves by winning a lot of golf tournaments.
Hey, I got to ask you a question before I do let you go. And that is, we've got a handicapper now in the house, and that, of course, is our champ, of course, Sharp, and who are the favorites on the women's side to win the individual medalists and the team trophies this year?
You know, if we're going to start off with the individuals, I think the number one name that kind of pops out is Ingrid Lindblad, who's a graduate student at LSU. She has been a four-time first-team All-American. By the time this season's done, she's going to be a five-time first-team All-American. She's arguably going to win the award for the Annika Award, which is given to the Women's College Player of the Year. Ingrid is a little bit overshadowed the last few years because of how dominant Rose Zhang, and even before Rose, Rachel Heck were. But Ingrid is the best women's golfer in the history of the SEC, the Southeastern Conference. She's got a great opportunity to win. But another golfer who's actually also in the SEC at Florida State, Julia Lopez Ramirez, she just won the SEC title for the second straight year. She's been playing really well as the season's gone on. You also have to look at Lottie Wode, who just won the Augusta National Women's Amateur and made the cut in her debut at the Chevron Championship last week. When you go to the team side, it's a little bit more open this year than I think it has been in the past. Stanford is still up there and is really, really good. You also have defending champion Wake Forest is finally healthy and is playing really good golf. South Carolina is a team that is capable of winning in match play if they can get to match play. That's been a big struggle for them, and they finally kind of got over that hump last year, but then lost early in match play. Like I said, LSU has a deep roster. USC, I know we talked about them a little bit earlier. Auburn there too. There's not just one dominant team this year. It seems that there's a little bit more parity. It's actually a little bit difficult for me when I make selections before the tournament starts. I still haven't fully picked who I think is going to win yet, just because I think it's a little bit more difficult this year than it has been in years past.
Especially with the idea of match play coming into it, because match play is you have three good players. That's all you need. Three girls that play on that particular day, and that game's over.
Well, I heard him talk about that. I was confused.
What's that?
That they had introduced the match this year.
Yeah, the match play is a totally different animal, as North Carolina can attend to from last year's dominance in the
middle play. Oh, by the way, Cameron, I forgot to tell you that Bill Butner, our St. Petersburg resident pro, he's over the top North Carolina Tar Heels. So you'll just have to humor him from time to time. I might be a little biased towards the University of Iowa Hawkeyes. Of course, John Rager, as he opened up the show, giving love to his Charleston. What are their nicknames again?
He called it Charleston Cougars.
Oh, okay. The Charleston Cougars. I see Cougars walking by all the time down here at Ferg's. Quite often.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, they must all have gotten to Charleston back in the day. Anyway, Cameron, appreciate you taking time to join us. We'll try to get you on during the course of all these regionals and to get your update. Fellas, I'll tell you, we might want to give him some old man advice. He's newlywed, and he's heading out of town for 2 weeks. Would you fly her in on the weekend or not? I told him we better do the old flyer in on the weekend. He's going to be in California.
No. It's totally work. It's work. Sunrise to sunset. It's work.
John, my advice would be absence makes the heart grow fonder. So have a nice trip, then come on back and take her to dinner and give her some flowers.
All right, champ, your opinion?
Live it up. I mean, she'll be back there when you're back there. Live it up.
Well, don't live your life like that. But I kind of like John's advice. And I concur with him. So, my friend, it's great to have you on the show. Looking forward to future conversations. And go Thunder. I'm sure that town is just off the charts right now.
Yeah, pleasure to be on, guys. I appreciate it. And, yeah, Thunder up. It's a fun ride and excited to see how far they can take it.
All right. And we'll talk Oklahoma State Cowboys and their golf history the next time we have you on, because there's plenty of it to talk about.
R.I.P. Victor Hovland.
All right, that's Cameron Jordan, and of course he's with Golf Week, and another great addition to our broadcast there, John Rager.
Well, you know, I really enjoy listening to their journalists from Golf Week USA Today, because they Golf Week covers everything, and they cover from the preps like you do, Mike, in high school to the pros, right? And I think that when you get these folks on. Not only do they specialize in a certain area, they also, you know, generally can write articles about anything going on in the world of golf when they're asked to. And I learned so much by talking to them, and it's an enjoyable conversation. And, yeah, they got their ear to the rail. They're at the tour events. They're there at the college championships. They're everywhere. And they got a great team, too. So sometimes when they're trying to report on things, they can rely on the wealth and the expanse of all the other reporters are out there on the field covering the world of golf. So go to Golf Week. Golf Week's owned by USA Today. And, you go there every day, and you can keep up with everything going on in the world of golf.
You're listening to On the Tee Florida. We're live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, home of our 19th hole clubhouse studios, where we've got two simulators upstairs. They're supported by Michelob Ultra for all of our leagues. And we're just coming up on the one-year anniversary. So we got our feet wet this year, and we got a lot of exciting plans for the balance of this year. We're going to, for the three majors, we've got some great events that we're going to implement. They're going to be pro-am format that John's got, and I had a meeting with Chris Lewis. So we'll have all kinds of prizes, swag, and we're going to promote the heck out of it with the Budweiser Michelob Ultra guys. And a guy that doesn't need a reintroduction, but we will. He's Michael Furr, and he's kind enough to take time out of his busy day, of course, in the Lone Star State. It was as I watched all these tournaments, Michael, and I talked to the guys on the way when we opened up. You know, the debate now on is Texas taking over as the hub of golf in America. A position that Florida held for decades, and if it wasn't for history, it'd be a slam dunk right now that Texas has more events, They have more an impact. Well, obviously, as I said, with Scottie Scheffler, the world's number one, bringing from the Lone Star State. But got to be a great time for you guys as a teaching pro and a guy that's got his tentacles in every aspect of golf.
Hey, Big Mike. Thanks for having me on. How is everybody?
Everybody's
doing
good.
Great, Mike. Also, I know that last week was the Invited Classic down in Dallas there, and I understand that I guess you had a big rain day of some sorts, and but got a lot of compliments from the players themselves on how they were able to get the golf course playable. So why don't you give us a little recap of what happened that week, because I know you were probably hanging around there.
Yeah, they spent a lot of money redoing the golf course to where it drained properly. After the LPGA left there a few years ago and went to the Colony, the PGA Tour, the LPGA, and the Corn Ferry does not allow multiple tours to play the same location. It kind of diminishes the value of the location. So they tricked it up a little bit, helped the drainage. I mean, I think it plays better, probably a little harder. But, yeah, it was a great event. Little unfortunate Saturday, got rain, but, you know, that's the nature of it. Supposed to rain for the next 10 days in a row here. We have the Corn Ferry Tour that started today at Texas Rangers Golf Club. Next week we have the Byron Nelson, CJ Cup Byron Nelson. So, yeah. April flowers bring May flowers.
Well, you know, also, you've got a major championship coming to Frisco, Texas, there at the home of the PGA of America, which is the KitchenAid Senior PGA Championship, May 24th to 28th. And I understand that's going to be the very first major, I guess, that's being hosted by the PGA at Frisco. Well, and I guess over the next 12 years, they're going to have like 26 of the elite PGA championships, whether they're club professional events or whatever. So have you been over to play that course?
Yeah, it's set up for they development and the design. So let's talk about why we moved the PGA headquarters from Florida to Texas. So Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth is right in the dead center middle of the country. Whether you're coming from New York, Washington State, California, or Florida, it makes it easier for the aspiring PGA professionals that's going through the process to be a club professional to be able to travel from those distances and come to the middle of America. It was harder for the California guys to go all the way to Florida. I mean, it's a long trip. And if you fail that portion of your test, you got to go home and come back again. So, yeah.
Well, you know, I was president of the North Florida section twice, in the mid-90s, and then again from 2009 to 2011. And as president of the PGA section, we were the fourth largest. We still are, obviously, with, you know, 1,200 PGA members in our section, you know, 42 counties and 750 golf courses. But, so we're kind of biased, thinking, well, you know, we loved it when the headquarters was in Florida. But actually, we noticed throughout the years, as the PGA of America stepped up their educational programs, and also on their meetings, trying to get more of the golf professionals together in the committees and trying to get more member input to plan more things that are beneficial to the game of golf. And also the PGA members were constantly flying into the Dallas airport all the time, and we would have our meetings there. And so it was just a natural fit. I agree with you that it's great for travel, and not only just for PGA golf professionals, but it's also great for corporate America, which is well represented in Dallas. And so, at first there were some hard feelings with the PGA members because a lot of them bought some condos and homes as their winter home down there in Palm Beach, and to be close to the national headquarters and PGA National and the PGA Golf Club up in Port St. Lucie. But I think everybody realizes that, and they all know it, that the younger generation of PGA golf professionals, this is a state-of-the-art facility. I know the North Texas section has headquarters there, but the facility is more than just a couple of nice golf courses, beautiful hotel, beautiful development, and all kinds of stuff. Yeah. I have not been there personally, so I can only tell you from what I see on the web and from online meetings and stuff like that. So have you been able to go there and see what's going on?
Oh, yeah, it's very cool. They even have a lighted par 3 course to keep people golfing, you know, even at nighttime. It's a fully rounded concept.
Wait a minute. Did you say a lit par 3 course?
Oh, yeah.
For hacks like me?
Man, I mean, you know, don't call yourself that.
You don't understand.
I love those. I used to go those in Denver all the time. We get about 14 Michelob Ultras in us and go and hit some balls on a par 3 under the lights right next to a cocktail lounge. You can't go wrong.
I mean, when you have a driving range there, a full professional facility, instructors there, you know, around the clock, if your lights are on, you might as well include a par 3 course that's basically a glorified practice facility because you can't hit evergreen, so you really get to work on your short game and your creativity. So, I mean, there's a lot of benefit to it.
Well, gosh, Mike, I'm glad that maybe the clientele's a little different because the 14 Michelob Ultras and you show up to a golf course par 3 this lit, it's the only place in the world you're going to need a bouncer for a par 3 course.
I have a real funny quick story about drinking beer during the pro-am. So I used to caddy for this one guy at the Byron Nelson. The guy brings an 18 pack and puts them in his bag.
My
so
man.
I'm feeding this guy beer as fast as I can feed him because, man, that bag is a whole lot lighter. And on the 18th hole, we leave all the beer on the tee box and give it away to the fans because the cold beer is up there waiting for us on the 18th green.
The things you have to do as a caddy, right? What's the weirdest thing you ever had to do as a caddy? Because you did a lot of caddying for some very important people.
Dallas National is what I call a billionaire's country club. And so I was caddying for this guy, and he was ready to throw his crap in the pond. And so I'm like, look, sir, I'm responsible for all of your clubs until we're done. If you really want to come back out here, I will drive you back out here, and I will help you throw them things out there. And so we finished the round. I was walking, carrying his bag. I called over the cart boy, and he brought us a cart. I loaded up, and he's like, what are you doing? I said, well, we're going to go finish what you want. He said, just take them. So that was part of my tip. That was part of my tip. I got the bag, staff bag, all the clubs. Because that guy don't give a crap. He don't care. These guys don't ask how much a Bentley costs. Like, they just say, send it to my house.
Hey, you know, Michael, it's really fun to hear your caddy stories because I know, you know, most of us have caddy. You know, I know that there was just an article today from Golf Week USA Today about Tommy Fleetwood caddying for his stepson in a challenge event over in Europe. But, you know, talking about caddies, I remember my first time caddying for a real pro, and I think he was more of a hustler than a pro. And this is back in the 70s. His name was Leon Klump, and he was a big gambler, but he played like the satellite PGA Tour and all that stuff. And I remember he says, you know, so he says the golf balls are in this there, and I've got this there and that there in my golf bag. He says, but don't go in that lower pouch. And I go, why? And he goes, well, there's a loaded 45 in there. Don't touch that. And then carrying his bag, I'm worried about, I hope he's got the safety on that gun because I certainly don't want to get shot in the butt carrying this bag around and all of a sudden I hit a bump or lay it down the wrong way.
Hey, but what if he has one of those exploding golf balls with a 22 cap in it? It could be a false alarm.
Not good. Hey, the state of Texas, of course, already was very extremely proud of Scotty, as you guys call them, String Bean Scheffler growing
String
up.
String Bean, heck yes. Oh, yeah, I love that.
How about String Bean again? He just continues just to mesmerize the world golfing world.
Stay humble, stick
to his roots, waiting for his new baby to come on the planet, and in the meantime decides to take a few hours and win another golf tournament.
Oh yeah, he's so genuine. This guy is like the modern day Tony Romo, and Tony Romo and Jordan Spieth and Scottie Scheffler are great friends.
This is not Cowboys country here, pal.
Yeah, Blomo. That guy ain't a cowboy no more, so it's all good. I played golf with Kenny Gant yesterday, and he's a Florida guy. He's a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. He retired as a Buccaneer.
Who was that?
Kenny Gant, the Shark.
Yeah, he was a Tampa Bay Buck.
Yeah, he retired. He played 2 years with Tampa Bay, and then he retired. He got bad knees. So he played like 7 years with the Cowboys, got 2 Super Bowl rings, and then he played 2 years with Tampa Bay.
He was a kick returner for us, thanks to Juan up there in the control room. Hey, how about Tony Romo's claim that he's played over 500 rounds with Scottie Scheffler and not won zero over par?
Tony Romo's handicap is a +2. So he shoots 2 under par average every time. I've seen him shoot as low as 66.
But what about 500 times without a round over par, Scottie Scheffler?
I believe that was Scottie. I mean, he has. He did have the most consecutive rounds under par, and then he bogeyed he three putted the last hole to break that streak. But I kind of almost thought he did it purposely so that there's no more pressure.
Hey, you know, Michael, it's interesting. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, Bill might want to chime in on this also, about his golf swing, where, you know, it's obvious as a golf instructor when you work with people, you know, balance is important, and you're always telling everybody stick that finish. And, but Scotty's, has something that he's always done, that slide shuffle.
He's always spun his feet out. We call it the sleepy slide.
Yeah, and,
he's always done that, even as a young kid. He spins on his feet. He actually is on his heels. When you're on your heels, that's why he can spin the front part of his feet like he does, because he's on his heel. You're not supposed to be on your heels because, you know, if you're on your toes, you're losing your balance. Well, we don't want people stretching and reaching forward. So he's truly on his heel. You can learn a lot from that.
Yeah, you know, and I tell you what, kudos to Randy Smith, his golf instructor, who obviously has been his pro since, you know, Scottie was a little kid.
Yeah.
But not to change that.
Yeah, he's been a Royal Oaks. That was Justin Leonard's coach. I mean, Randy Oaks has been at Shady Oaks for 35 years. And he's coached everybody that has been an up-and-comer. And so he worked with Scottie Scheffler from the time he was a little kid because his family were members there.
I was going to say, that was a big thing that Greg Norman did a lot of, sliding his back foot diagonally across his body, but he did stay on both feet and did stay in balance a lot better than Scotty's doing.
Well, the way it is, it goes, you know, if you're right-handed, it goes right heel, left toe, right heel, left toe, right heel, left toe. So, you know, that right foot, once you're coming through the follow-through, your right foot is kind of no longer important, and that's why it's moving.
Hey, were you at the Champions event last week?
I was there for Thursday. I was supposed to kick Anthony Anderson's ear, but he didn't sign up. He didn't commit to the event. So I went up there to go talk some smack with Alfonso and said that we need to get Anthony next year.
Yeah, I thought you guys were going to pretty much cement the deal as far as setting a date. And he dodged you again.
We were supposed to do it on Wednesday last week for the pro-am day on the driving range. But Anthony Anderson, last minute, uncommitted because of contract disputes. So, yeah, that was a bummer because me and my partner and Alfonso, we were ready to go. But we needed Anthony because the Discovery Channel wants me to beat Anthony, so...
You know, if I was a boxing promoter, I'd just say that the champ, and that'd be you. This guy keeps dodging you, man.
Keep talking smack. I'm all right. You know, I'm still the king of the long swing. So if they want some, they can come get some right here in Texas.
Well, we still got to get you here in Florida, my man. I appreciate taking time. Time to join us. I'm sure it's been a lot of fun for all of you watching Scottie Scheffler's rise. And
wait till he has his baby, and wait till he becomes established as a family man. Then you're going to see another Tiger run.
Well,
Jordan Spieth is just now there. Jordan Spieth is just now getting there where he's had his little boy long enough to to where he's kind of established himself, and he's fixing to become dangerous again, too.
That's an interesting point, Michael, that you bring up. It's a very interesting point because there's been a lot of, you know, throughout the years, if you start looking at all the greats in golf, all of them, when they started having kids, they had a little fall off for a little while. And for a couple of years, like Jack Nicklaus didn't win a major event for 3 years from 1967 on until his kids got a little bit older. He had all of his kids, you know, he seems like situated. Tom Watson was the same, and you see this with Jordan right now, you know, young families and trying to get it together, and there's always that little lull. But I suspect that, Jordan is going to come back pretty strong here because he's starting to show signs that he's competitive again.
Yeah, our new big four, which is Jordan Spieth, Scottie Scheffler, Justin Thomas, and Ricky Fowler. They've all been recently married. A couple of them already have kids. But all those guys are fixing to become dangerous again.
Make sure they keep their mamas happy.
What about Texas's long-lost son, Mr. Dougie Gim? Any thoughts on Mr. Gim coming over and winning his maiden tour event eventually here? Best ball striker on the league, one of those.
That's a Doug Gim with a double N, right? Double Gim? Is that his name?
That's the one. That's Scotty's teammate. Yep. Yeah, Mr. Dougie Gim there, for sure.
Right. There's Gim and Kim, G-H-I-M, and then Kim. And right now they're tied for 19th at the Zurich Classic at 7 under par.
Like Scottie Scheffler and Jordan Spieth, those guys are dangerous in Austin at the match play because that was their home course when they went to the University of Texas.
Unfortunately, the PGA said match play wasn't important, so they took it off the schedule.
And I'd like to see them do a combined LPGA, maybe PGA, and maybe even bring in some Corn Ferry guys. I mean, we need some diversity in this.
Well, Michael, that's a really important point. One of the pundits out there on the social media was talking about the timing's obviously not the right time for Scottie Scheffler because of his wife expecting and Nelly Korda, you know, going on to, you know, she's got yet another tournament to win next week when she plays. But he said, what a dream pairing that would be. Have Scottie Scheffler and Nelly Korda play in the Zurich Classic. And if they were able to pull it off and win it, then Nelly Korda would be a PGA Tour player next year.
Anything is possible.
Well, Bill Buettner, you played in a couple of those events back in the day, the JCPenney.
The JCPenney was the start of it all, and now they have the one at the end of the year down in Naples.
Oh, yeah, that was a great event last year.
Yeah, that's where, who won that one? That was Jason Day and somebody?
Yeah, it was.
Jason Day is also another guy that's getting it back together. Jason Day is also getting it back together again. He also is another sleeper.
Six kids. He's got six kids, five or six kids. It's going to be hard to get back.
That's the way the Aussies roll, baby.
Hey, before we go, I got to ask you a quick question on Scotty's success. It's always been in February and March and April. It's unique. He doesn't have a win outside of February, March, and April.
And horses for courses and horses for times of the year, you know. Even though it's cold here in Texas in February and March, you know, when they're playing, you know. He's a very good adjuster. He adjusts very well. And Jordan Spieth adjusts well, too. That's why both those guys are really dangerous British Open and Open players. Because they love to shape the ball. They love to work it. They love creativity. I love Bubba Watson, that guy. Hates hitting a straight shot. I mean, he sees it working to both directions, and that's the creativity.
Well, you know, Michael, that's a good question that Bill just brought up about the, you know, he's only, you know, the or Champ brought this out, I guess, the only 3 months, February through April, of the times when he's won all these tournaments, like already he's a shoo-in for player of the year. So if he starts getting hot in June or July or August, you know, then he can truly start looking at himself as like another Tom Watson or Arnold Palmer and you know that type of level of category, because if he can start winning all year versus that 1 3 months, Johnny Miller was good at winning in those 3 months out in the desert, you know, the California swing in the desert. Yeah, he was awesome for, you know, 5 or 6 weeks every year, but sometimes had a hard time. time going past that. You know, he did win the U.S. Open in June one year. So do you think that what do you think that is, Scotty's done that? Is it just because it's too early to tell? Because he's really only been a factor now for about three or four years out there.
He's a legit, like, veteran player, but he's still growing and developing, you know. I mean, he's not even close to his potential. So, I mean, it's stupid scary.
Well, Michael, we appreciate you taking time. We're at the top of the hour now. Well, what's on your agenda? And did you run into any big-time celebrities when you were there early in the week last week?
Only when I went into the bathroom and saw myself in the mirror, I said, hey, I know that guy. My boy John Daly, he played horrible. That guy got second to the last place. Michael Campbell, U.S. Open champion, that guy shot 10 over par. He got second. He got last place. You know, with it being wet, no matter how much you get to ride in a golf cart, look, the senior tour, either the player rides in the cart or the caddy rides in the cart with a bag. You can't both be in the cart at the same time. So, you know, that's a little awkward for those golfers because they can't drive the cart out there on the fairway. And so even if they're having to hobble a bit, they got to play, you know, cart path only.
All right, my friend.
Well, I guess that's just like walking, but I can tell you that if I was out there, my cat would be walking all the time. I can tell you that right now.
Your preparation has to be different, and the expectation has to be different. So, yeah, you got to prepare differently for that and be prepared for whatever. That's what professional golf's about, adapting and changing with the elements as they change.
All right, Michael, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for taking time. Of course, live from the Lone Star State, the hub, the epicenter of the world of golf these days. And you have a great week, my man. Great weekend.
Thank you guys for having me on, and blessings to all the Floridians, for all of us big Texans.
Well, you said Tony Romo doesn't show up in September. It was December.
Tony Romo was defending champion,
Mike,
but he didn't defend his title.
I fumbled that one there.
All right, we're winding things down here. We got a couple of minutes.
Mike, I want to chime in here. Hey, Bill. So I want to give you a quick update there to be an assistant of yours today on the facts and figures of what goes on in the world of golf in the 2023 Ramp Thornton Invitational held down at Tiburon Golf Club. Jason Day in the bunker. Lydia Ko stepped up with a 3-wood in the wind from 203 yards and struck the shot of the day on the par 5 17th, essentially locking up the victory at the inaugural Grant Thornton Invitational. There you go.
He had half
the team right. He had Jason, but Lydia Ko was also his partner.
When we come back the second hour, we'll go over the leaderboards, and then we'll break down last week's tournaments. We didn't touch upon those either. And we'll, of course, we've got our new segment, and that, of course, is Fortunes in the Fairway. We'll break down this week's and the prognostication of one Champ Sharp, and then we'll have the John Rager report, and then we'll just talk about the world of golf. So when we come back, looking forward to that. And I want to get a couple of stories from you from the collegiate side of things during the regionals and getting sent to different portions of the country and how these coaches get their teams ready. It's, you know, March Madness, at least you're in an indoor facility when you get sent out, you know, up north or west, you get sent down into the heat. Not the case in the world of golf. We'll be back on the T4 and we're live. First Bar and Grill, 19th hole, Clubhouse Studios.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
Listen.
This is CBS News.